Hello, my name is Scott Bradley, and this is Scott Score Podcast. Today, I'm joined by the host of the Jersnet podcast, Craig Ray. We discuss if Dundee should be punished after their game with Rangers was called off, all the latest Rangers transfer rumours, is Brendan Rodgers overrated as a manager, and who should replace Neil Warnock at Pittodrie. All this and so much more. Enjoy the show. So, Craig, Rangers went out of the Europa League last week to Benfica. What was your take on that performance?
I think in terms of performance, it was pretty decent. I think over both legs, Rangers really, you know, had a lot of the ball. I think they could have won and probably should have won the first leg. I think maybe the second leg at Ibrox. To be quite honest, I think it was just the injuries and the fitness catching up with Rangers. I think people might look at it and say that, you know, Benfica have got all this great quality, and on paper they do, but to be quite honest, I don't think it was a lack of quality that let Rangers down. I just think it was the fitness and the injuries that were catching up. I think, to be quite honest, if Philippe Clement had been in charge from the start of the season and managed to get a proper grip on pre-season and the player injuries, I genuinely think Rangers would have went through. But it's a step too far for Rangers in the Europa League this year, unfortunately. But, you know, I think it was a respectable European campaign, to be quite honest. And, you know, you're not going to sit here and complain after being narrowly defeated off a side like Benfica.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, Craig. I completely agree, because see, in terms of the performance, right, from both sides, there really wasn't much between them. It was like whoever was going to score first were going to go on and win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel as though the two weak areas for Rangers on the night was up front and out on the right-hand side. Because if Rangers had a proper striker up front, just say Alfredo Morelos in his prime, I do believe Rangers would have went on and won that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree, but again, like I mentioned earlier, injuries catching up to us, that right hand side and the striker position. It's positions that were, you know, we've got players that are injured in, unfortunately, at the moment. I know Cortez isn't in the European squad, so he wouldn't have played even if he was fit, but I think McCausland probably would have started. He's came in and done pretty well in big games, you know, away to Betis, the cup final. He was okay away at Celtic as well, so he's done quite decent in the big games, McCausland, and I think up front you really just need to go with Essers at the moment. There's no way that Kamal Roof was able to start that game last week. You know, especially with the weather and stuff like that as well, and the way the pitch was, you know, there's every chance that he could have been injured again. So, unfortunately, you need to kind of make do with what you've got. And I think it's no real surprise here that the two areas that you talk about are the ones that Rangers have probably suffered the most from this season in terms of injuries.
Yeah, and see what I've seen from the Rangers support as well, like the general consensus was, of course, the Rangers fans were disappointed. But overall, they weren't like really upset, because Europe was always going to be a bonus this season. And the fact Rangers even got to the last 16 was really impressive in itself, considering the position Rangers were in at the start of the group.
No, definitely. I mean, the way that I kind of look at this European campaign is from the prism of the Aris Limassol game at home, not so much the away game, because that was the second game and you know, we beat Betis in the first game. So that kind of levelled each other out, if that kind of makes sense. But the game at home to Aris, we've came away with a disappointing draw, basically means that we've got no choice but to go to Betis and win. Otherwise, we're not just going to be not finishing top of the Europa League group, but we'll be in the Conference League. So, you know, to actually come out of that, not even just go through, but to finish top of the group, put in that performance away to Betis, beat them 4-2 in aggregate, in short, I think was remarkable. And then, you know, we've went to Benfica, we've done well to get a draw. It should have been Rangers winning. I think it was one dubious refereeing decision and a silly mistake. And to be quite honest, another silly mistake for the goal on Thursday as well. So if you look at it from that point of view, really Rangers going out was probably all of their own doing, unfortunately. But, you know, it's about margins at this level. And, you know, you mentioned the fans there, Scott. It was actually quite refreshing, the reaction at the end. You know, the fans staying to sort of clap the players off. And, you know, I've been at Rangers games before where we've been maybe knocked out of Europe and we have put in decent performances, but, you know, we've just not got over the line. But fans have been raging about it and stuff like that. And, you know, there's always going to be those few that are raging about it, like my dad, as always. But I think it was quite refreshing to see the players be be sort of clapped off and cheered off, because I think the fans realised that they gave 100% and they gave everything out there in the pitch, which, to be quite honest, is all you can ask for.
Yeah, I don't like saying this, right, but do you think it was a blessing in disguise that Rangers actually went out of the Europa League, so now they can actually put all their attention on the league and the Scottish Cup?
Well, we'll find out at the end of May, won't we? That's the thing. It might be or it might not be. I tend to think that it could be. Historically, if you look at the last three times in the last 21 years, anyway, a team's got to the UEFA Cup or Europa League final, they don't win the league. Traditionally, if you have a deeper run in Europe and the Europa League, you don't go on and win the league. And history's proven that over the last sort of couple of decades. So it might be what we need. I think we were running on empty a bit, but I still do think we're going to get a lot of players back after that break, and maybe we could have had another go at the next round. I see Benfica got Marseille, who, to be quite honest, I mean, there's a lot of good teams left in Europa League. Marseille is probably the draw that you're thinking that might have been the best chance that you've got of going through. So as much as, yeah, it could be a blessing in disguise because it will allow us to get players back, I think we would have got those players back anyway. And I think we've seen a lot from this Rangers squad that they do like to go sort of Thursday, Sunday. But, you know, I think there's nine league games left for Rangers now. They're just off the back of winning nine league games in a row. And if they can repeat the feat as they done, you know, the last block of fixtures in the league, then they'll go on and win the league. So we'll see if it's a blessing in disguise come the end of May anyway.
And so Rangers' game against Dundee was called off on Sunday. That's the third time a game has been called off at Dens Park this season. Craig, do you think a potential punishment is coming Dundee's way?
I don't think it will come Dundee's way, but it should come their way. I think it's actually the fourth. I thought it was the third, Scott, but it turns out it's actually the fourth game at Dens Park that's been postponed this season because of that reason. I mean, embarrassing, beyond embarrassing. You can come up with all the buzzwords that people have said the last few days. For me, it's just sort of Scottish football in a nutshell. We seem to have this great ability to sort, you know, we love to hate ourselves in this country. And, you know, I've seen some wild takes on social media the last few days about the game. You know, you've got Celtic fans going on full conspiracy mode, and then you've also got Rangers fans going on full conspiracy mode. At the end of the day, I remember when Falkirk weren't granted access to the Premier League a good few years ago because they never had a 10,000-seater stadium, and Aberdeen managed to stay up. I think that having a pitch that's in good condition that allows good football to be played and matches to actually go ahead is much more important than having a stadium that holds a certain amount of fans. So why is that not a prerequisite ruling before you come into the league? Why are the rules on pitches so, you know, they're obsolete and they're also quite, you know, they're difficult to understand. You know, there's no actual ruling in place about pitches. It just says you need to have a decent pitch, but there's no actual method of punishment or whatnot. I've seen people say, you know, dot them the one the points and give Rangers a win. I don't believe in that because, you know, I want Rangers to win games on the park. I've seen Celtic sort of sneak into Europe through the back door in the last decade or so, twice actually. I've also seen them being handed a league title over Zoom. I don't want to do it that way. I want to win a league on the pitch. But I certainly think Dundee should be given a hefty fine. I mean, the thing with Dundee as well is, you know, they're obviously not spending the upkeep on their current stadium because they're moving or they're trying to move to a new stadium. But that's not an excuse. You know, if you're moving house, right, but you're not moving house for 5 years, you don't just stop, you know, you don't just no get a new boiler when your boiler's gubbed, or, you know, if your shower's broke, you don't just no get a new shower and you just don't get a wash. So Dundee need to maintain certain standards in the Premier League. The game was live on Sky. I think the only reason that, you know, the SPFL were actually investigating this is probably because Sky have hammered them for it. And some of the stuff that the Dundee chairman and a few Dundee fans have hit out with the last few days, I know we'll talk about it, but it's quite frankly embarrassing, and it just sums up the pathetic nature of Scottish football, to be quite honest.
No, you're spot on, Craig, you're spot on. And of course, the plastic pitches get a hard time, they do, right? But the state of Dundee's pitch was it was embarrassing. It was not a good look for Scottish football whatsoever. And of course, it was on the telly as well. And I think the game was called off. I think it was like 1 hour before kickoff or something. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's the thing, you know. Fans of clubs such as Dundee are quite vocal about, oh, we've got a really bad TV deal, you know, the old firm's got too much money, we can't spend decent money on players and stuff like that. But then they'll make light of a situation that happened on Sunday. Make no mistake about it, Dundee have put that TV deal at risk. And by the way, the TV deal that this country's got is atrocious as it is. If you're not fulfilling your contractual obligations to Sky, who are, whether we like it or not, the biggest funders of Scottish football out with the supporters, that can lead to further issues down the line. If I'm an executive at Sky and I'm going into negotiations with the SPFL, and the SPFL are saying, yeah, we've got this product, you know, we want more money, you know, we want smaller teams like Dundee and whatnot to get more money, I would just tell them to do one like that. You can't show games when you're supposed to show them. We've had to redo all of our scheduling. Advertisers would have paid for premium advertising space. Now, when the game's been rescheduled, it's been rescheduled on a weeknight where there's Champions League games. So the viewing figures for the rearranged game are going to be a lot lower. And to be quite honest, it's just beyond embarrassing. From a financial point of view as well, for Dundee, it's not good for them. And I've got a little bit of a, not a conspiracy theory as such, because I wouldn't like to call myself that, but, you know, Dundee said that Mother Nature let, you know, Dunn basically caused that at the weekend. You know, it wasn't, it rained all over Scotland. I genuinely think they just left that pitch out because probably on the Friday night they went, ack, it's not looking too great, but if it rains tonight, the pitch will probably be a bit worse. It'll put Rangers off their stride. They won't be able to play the way that they want to play, and we can get an advantage from it. And it backfired massively. You had John Nelms come out and say that people are working on the pitch at 5 a.m. So that tells me that Dundee knew the game was in jeopardy from the previous evening, because you don't just phone people at like 5 in the morning saying, come to the stadium to clean this up. You tell them the night before, you need to be in the morning to try and get the pitch in a decent condition to play it. So Dundee knew the night before that the game could have been called off, and it takes the Rangers kit man going in at about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning before everyone else to find out that the game could have been postponed. So John Nelms has either lied about, you know, having or known about the pitch being in that condition and having people out at 5 a.m. He's either lied about that or he's lied to a member club about the potential postponement of a game. Either way, it's not a good look for him, it's not a good look for Dundee, and it's not a good look for the league.
No, you absolutely nailed it there, Craig, absolutely nailed it. And we'll move on from that, talk about some Rangers transfer rumours. It looks like Bona Barisic is set to leave Rangers in the summer. It looks like he's going to be going to Turkey at the end of his contract. Craig, what's your thoughts on that? In my opinion, I think it's the right move for both parties, because Bona Barisic has been a great servant for Rangers. He's won every domestic trophy in the country, played in a European final, but I think it's time for both parties to go their separate ways.
Yeah, I think you're right, Scott. You know, I've seen a few people go a bit mental about Bona Barisic and player trading models and all the last couple of days. You know, at the end of the day, the guy's been here for 6 years. You know, I do genuinely think he has tried his best for Rangers. It has been poor for a large amount of the last couple of seasons, but, you know, it's just been what it is. He played a massive part in his winning the league a couple of years ago. You know, he has put in decent performances now and then. He has been a good player for Rangers. At the end of the day, we paid about 1.5-2 million quid for him to get the number of appearances, goals and assists we have out of him. He's more than made that back for us. And it just feels like a natural ending, to be quite honest. People will say that he should have been sold earlier. I'll say that's probably with hindsight. And also as well, it's hard to maybe sell players that are low in confidence or maybe aren't doing so well. I think the biggest rumour would have been the summer of 2021. There was talk that he was going to Roma for a couple of million. I think that was just when Mourinho took over, I'm not too sure. And I remember we played Celtic at Ibrox again where Hollander scored, and Barisic was almost breaking down in the centre circle after the game, and it almost seemed as if he was off, and I think we were only getting about 2.5-3 million quid for him. if memory serves me right, but for whatever reason, that deal didn't go ahead and we kept him. And it was just unfortunate that it was sort of 6 months later he had that performance at Celtic Park, and then the whole thing changes. And again, if you're a club, I mean, he's obviously got 2 years left in his deal after that. If you're seeing a player that's low in confidence, maybe not putting in decent performances on a hefty wages, you probably wouldn't pay a decent enough transfer fee for him to get him out. You might just wait for him to run his contract down. Plus as well, Yilmaz, who has been great as of late, but let's be quite honest, he's not set the head of the light for his first year, 18 months at Ibrox anyway, and a lot of people were saying that Barisic should have been ahead of him. And I always maintain that you do need two good players for every position as well, for that squad depth. So I think it's a natural end for him to leave anyway. But you know, he's been a good servant for Rangers, and despite some of his mistakes, he leaves with my best wishes anyway.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like you see, in his last game against Kilmarnock, it was a
I forgot about that, Scott. You didn't need to remind me of that.
It was horrific. It really was.
It was bad.
I think, like, obviously, I've always defended Barisic in a way, right? And I do believe some of the criticism that he had received from elements of the Rangers support has been way over the top at times. But that performance against Kilmarnock was just indefensible. It was really, really poor. And then obviously got hauled off at half-time, and we've not seen him since. But hopefully that will not. Hopefully you'll get maybe another appearance before the end of the season, of course, because I don't want that to be his final appearance in a Rangers jersey.
I agree. I mean, hopefully, you know, if we do go on and have an amazing end to the season, we've seen it before where you give players a kind of final nod, a final farewell, like, you know, Steven Gerrard bringing on Greg Stewart for the last 10 minutes of the Aberdeen game, even bringing on Jermaine Defoe, who
I
think...
Lee Wallace? You're thinking Lee Wallace, aren't you?
No, I mean the season when we won the league a couple of years ago. He brought Greg Stewart on for like the last sort of 10 minutes, as if to say, right, there you go. Even, you know, but he actually did do that. He done that with Lee Wallace again against Aberdeen. You're right, a couple of seasons earlier. I even go back to the likes of playing Dundee United at Tannadice in the last game of the season. We're 3-0 up. Barry Ferguson's obviously going to leave. Walter Smith brings him on for the last couple of minutes just to sort of give him a farewell. So, you know, hopefully if we are in a position to do that, then we can do it with Bournemouth. But if the league is going down to the wire and there's like a minute to go and it's still in the balance, yeah, I think we should save the final farewell, Bournemouth.
spot on, Craig. So, of course, on X, there's been rumblings as well over the last few days. You know, this always tends to happen, Craig, when it's international break.
Yep.
All these people come around, and I'll just a wee bit off topic as well. I think you've probably seen that Gareth Southgate is linked with the Man United job. That's been all over the papers. So that's how you know that all these crazy rumours happen during international break, because of course the journals need something to talk about. But according to some rumours on X, Jack Butland could be leaving Rangers in the summer for £15 million. And when I seen that, Craig, I was like, that is ludicrous. If Rangers sold Jack Butland for that amount, I don't even think it's hyperbolic to say this, but it would be a disgrace if Rangers sold a keeper of that quality for that amount. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you, Scott. I mean, look, people point to Jack Butland's age and the fact that we got him on a free. That doesn't matter. Right, Jack Butland has been Rangers' best player this season. It's either him or Tav, you know, and I think we'll come on to Tav later, but, you know, it's a matter of opinions. But Jack Butland has been either Rangers' best player or one of Rangers' two best players this season. Jack Butland's probably won Rangers the most amount of points this season, even out with Tav, the amount of saves that he's made. The facts remain that would you sell your best player for £50 million when he's in his prime? No. I don't know why you would do that. I mentioned it on Twitter about the Champions League revenue, about him being here for the length of his contract, and if he helps you to league titles, he'll more than make you £50 million back with the automatic Champions League entry. And I know people have said that Scotland's place might be taken off them, the automatic one, and that is true, but there are good sources out there who seem quite confident that Rangers wouldn't actually be impacted by that because of Rangers' good individual club coefficient, which would mean that Rangers would get, or very likely get, one of the extra places if they were the champions of Scotland. So for us, it should be fine. But if another team wins the league, then they'll need to qualify. So good luck. But the point I'm trying to make with that is he can more than making your money back. You know, I mean, 30 million quid's minimum you're going to get for the Champions League with the new format. You know, that's double just by winning one league, the £50 million in Jack Butland. And I don't think I'm being over the top when I say that Jack Butland has kept Rangers in this title race so far. We were, what, 8 points or something like that? 7, 8 points behind when Clement came in. We'd have been a lot more if Jack Butland wasn't there. I can tell you that for sure. And the thing with goalkeepers as well is, I seen someone say to me, you know, Jack Butland won't win you a league on his own, but he'll probably win you an extra 2 or 3 points. And it's like, yeah, in Scotland, 2 or 3 points is literally the difference most of the time between winning a league or losing a league. In the traditional sense, anyway, when Rangers and Celtic are going for it. I just think as well, from a club statement point of view, we've all spoke about, you know, player trading, and everybody seems to be obsessed with it now. People saying, you know, we need to copy Celtic. The first thing I'd say as well, why do we need to copy Celtic? That seems a bit short-sighted in itself. But second of all, I look at the way that Celtic have a relationship with their fans. Celtic are doing the things that Rangers fans are wanting them to do, well, wanting Rangers to do, in the sense that they're selling their best player every summer. They're reinvesting that into the squad. They're not spending quite so much money on replacements, and they've got a positive balance sheet. Look at the relationship the Celtic fans have with the Celtic board. Are we saying that the dream for Rangers is to maybe in 5 years' time have that same relationship? Because I think people will say this, you know, I want player trading, but then when it actually comes into practice, it's a different story. People keep saying Morelos, Kent, Barisic, to bring up those examples. They're very different in the sense that, first of all, you can only sell a player if you get a bid in. To my knowledge, the only bid that Rangers ever had for Alfredo Morelos was £60 million from Lille in January 2020. This was coming off, obviously, Morelos' best few months in the Europa League and stuff like that. And when we were trying to chase a league title, can you imagine the reaction if Rangers sold Morelos in January when we were going for a league title to try and stop them winning 9 in a row?
Yeah,
It would have been bedlam. Exactly, it would have been bedlam. Ryan Kent, I don't even know if Rangers received a bid for Ryan Kent. So we can all say it's good to we should sell players at this point and that point. It's no Football Manager, it's no FIFA. The bids need to actually come in, and when the bids do come in, it needs to be at the right price. I think people are now at a point with the player trading where, you know, they think that the clubs make mistakes in the past. So as soon as we get a decent bid now for a player, we must sell him. Or if we get £50 million for Butland, we just need to take it now. No, we don't. You know, we are in a decent financial footing, okay? We're not making record profits at Celtic, all right? But the debt that Rangers have are owed to directors, people that are fans of the club. It's not as if they're going to be calling for, you know, like typewriters and all that and bicycles to be moved to the trophy room if, you know, it's no paid back. Rangers and Celtic are in the market for the exact same type of player. It's just that Celtic is financed slightly differently. Rangers will probably need to get to that eventually. But we can do that with a new Champions League revenue. We don't need to keep selling our best players to do it. What I will say though is if we are going to sell Jack Butland from a purely statement point of view, it would need to be for a club record fee. So I think that's what, 21 or 22 million. For me, it would need to be at least that to set a statement, because if we sell a Jack Butland for £50 million now, who is our best player in his prime, if in a year's time we have got, you know, another Kent or another Morelos who we think's worth 20 million, why would a club pay £20 million for one of them if we've sold our best player for 15 million? So for me, it's about putting down a statement. If you're going to sell your best players, okay, fair enough, but it needs to be for a club record fee, in my opinion.
And obviously, there's been some other rumours about James Tavernier. Apparently, some teams in the Saudi Pro League are interested in Tavernier. What's your thoughts on that? You think it's a lot of nonsense?
Yeah, I can't see it happening. I genuinely just think people make things up to, as you say, it's international break, nothing's happening, except Wales have just kicked off against Finland, and actually we'll need to see if Rabih Matondo's starting that, to hopefully doesn't get injured. But you know, I can't see it happening. There's maybe an obvious sort of Gerrard link there, and people are just kind of putting two to two together and getting five. But if Tavernier is wanted by clubs, I would say it's the exact same as Jack Butland in the sense that it needs to be for a club record fee. You're talking about selling your best player, one of your two best players in their prime. So if you're going to do it, you need to sell them for a club record fee, in my opinion. I kind of compared it to Celtic and Callum McGregor. Callum McGregor, Jack Butland, James Tavernier, they're all of a similar age. They all have a similar influence to each other's respective sides, albeit in different ways. Callum McGregor is a great leader. He sets the tempo well for Celtic in the midfield. Jack Butland is a leader and wins Rangers points. James Tavernier is a leader, wins Rangers points. So they've got the same value, but in different ways. Would Celtic sell Callum McGregor for 15 million quid? No, they just wouldn't do that. So people seem to be wanting to compare us to Celtic. Fine, I'll take the bet and I'll compare Rangers to Celtic, and I've just done it there. If Celtic won't sell Callum McGregor for 15 million, Rangers shouldn't sell Jack Butland or James Tavernier for that amount either. And for me, if any of those two players are going to go, it needs to be for club record fees at an absolute minimum.
And the Old Firm's coming up on the 6th of April, Craig. How do you see that one going? Because that is a title decider, that potentially a title decider, because obviously there's going to be another Old Firm game, and that'll be at Parkhead when the split comes around. But how do you see the game going on the 6th of April at Ibrox?
Before I get on to the game itself, I think Rangers have got four games before the split. They've got Hibs at home, Celtic at home, Dundee away, Ross County away. Rangers are a point behind now with a game in hand. If Rangers win those four games, the next four games, worst case scenario, you'll be 5 points clear going into the split. And by the way, that's before Celtic need to go to Livingston and they play St Mirren at home as well. So there's every chance Celtic could drop points as well. But I think if Rangers win their next four games, I think Rangers will go on and win the league. I just can't see how Rangers would stop, or Celtic could stop, a 5-point lead going into the split, even with another Old Firm game to go. In terms of that game coming up, it is a tough one because, you know, it depends what players are back injured. I think Cantwell's going to be fully fit. Mitondo, McCausland will be fully fit. Lawrence Roof will be fully fit. Abdallah Seema, you know, somebody had him in a flight down to London earlier. He might be fit, apparently. So, you know, it depends really on what the squad's going to be. What I don't want Rangers to do, like they done the last home game against Celtic under Beale, is sit off them. I think that was the biggest mistake you can make. I actually thought the performance at Parkhead the last time round was pretty good. You know, it was just big moments letting you down. But for me, I'd go for it. Because if we go into that game, even if it is still a point behind with a game in hand, we could go 2 points clear and still have a game in hand over Celtic if we win that. I think go for the juggler, go for the kill. I'd like to see Lawrence and Cantwell start together in that game with Lundstrom playing as a sitter. Up front, probably
Dessers. No one else, really.
Yeah, out on the left, it would be interesting to see if it was Mitondo or Silva.
I'd put Silva, yeah. I think he's done well out on that left hand side.
He has, although I'm kind of thinking, you know, maybe with my tactical brain on, look at Alistair Johnson. And Fabio Silva is quite an intelligent player, and he actually just scored for the Portugal under 21s this evening, so good on him. And it was a great finish as well. But could you maybe put a fully fit Rabbi Mitondo there who could run Alistair Johnson ragged? Maybe get him on a yellow card and then with half an hour to go or something, get a more intelligent player and Fabio Silva on to try and outsmart him, basically. Is that something tactically we could do? I don't know. Out on the right, probably McCausland, if he's back. But definitely Cantwell and Lawrence. I want to see his go for it. I don't want to see his set off Celtic. And the thing is, as well, they do have players coming back from injury, but they're not going to be fully fit. Even if Callum McGregor's back for that game, he's not going to be fully fit. If Rio Hatate's back for that game, he's not going to be fully fit. And, you know, a lot of Celtic fans have been saying, oh, wait till we get these players back and stuff like that. To be quite honest, there wasn't any evidence earlier in the season that Celtic's performances were good when all of their players were fit. And even then, Brendan Rodgers seemed to prefer David Turnbull over Rio Hatate for the first few months of the season. But I just think Rangers need to go for it. It genuinely is a chance to go in for the kill. And I think mentally as well, we've not beaten Celtic this season so far. to do that in that game, I think would send out a huge, huge, huge statement. But what I would say is, if it turns out a draw, it would probably suit Rangers more than it does Celtic. I think if we are more than 2 points clear, I think if Celtic slip up against Livingston and Rangers beat Hibs, Celtic will need to win at Ibrox, quite frankly. And, as much as I want Rangers to win, if they can avoid defeat, at the end of the day, Rangers still have the advantage. But I want to win it, and I think we should go for it. Don't go in there with any fear. Don't sit off them. Go for it. And I genuinely do think if Rangers go for it, I think Rangers can win it and win it comfortably.
So, see if Rangers win the league this year, Craig Wright. Do you think Brendan Rodgers will be at Celtic next season?
I don't think he'll be at Celtic next season at all, to be quite honest. I think he's wanting his ticket. Kind of said it for the start. He clearly doesn't want to be there. It's you can see with some of his behaviours the last month or so that he's feeling the pressure. And the thing is, with Brendan Rodgers, if you look at history, when he's felt the pressure, he's never really done it. He started to feel the pressure with Liverpool in 2014 in that title run, messed it up. He started to feel pressure with Leicester towards last season, sorry, the season before, ended up getting relegated with them. So Brendan Rodgers is the type of person who he loves it when things are going his own way, but when things aren't going his own way, it's not so good for him. And the thing is as well, when you look at Brendan Rodgers, the only place where Brendan Rodgers is like respected in football is Celtic. And in fact, is he even respected at Celtic anymore?
I don't know so
A
much
lot
anymore,
of, I
though.
mean, a lot like a lot most of Celtic fans, I would say, don't want him to be there. But if you go down to England, you mention then Brendan Rodgers is a joke.
Oh, yeah.
Leicester, even though he won Leicester the FA Cup, that's the thing. Celtic fans will say, "Oh, aye, Brendan Rodgers won the FA Cup with Leicester," as if that's on par with like Claudio Ranieri winning the league with Leicester. See Leicester's squad under Brendan Rodgers, that was a good team. That was a team that should have been in the top five, top six.
The
So
ball was
for
knocked
them,
on twice, two seasons in a row as well, yeah.
so for them to win the FA Cup, all right, it's obviously a brilliant achievement, right? Like, don't take it away from them, but it wasn't like some sort of fairy tale story where you've got like a second division team, defying all the odds to win the FA Cup. And I seem to remember a VAR decision going against Chelsea in that game as well. So that might not even have happened. But to be quite honest, it's all well and good winning a cup, in a one-off game. But then when you're getting that same squad relegated pretty much the following seasons, what's the point? And with Brendan Rodgers, it always seems to be about blaming the board or the board having they backed him, the board haven't done this, they haven't done that. That was the excuse that a lot of Celtic fans have used for his time before in terms of their disastrous European performances. It's what Celtic fans used to try and justify Leicester getting relegated pretty much on his watch because he wasn't backed. Well, that doesn't matter. He still should have done a lot better with the squad that he had.
Yeah.
And they're now doing that again this season by saying that he's not been backed. He spent over 20 million quid in the transfer market. He's taken over a treble winning squad. Out of their best 11, nine of them started or would have started in their best 11 last season under a treble team. The only differences are Jota, which I appreciate is a hard player to replace, but he spent about 4 million quid on Palmer to replace him, who is actually getting similar, if not better, numbers to Jota, even though on the eye he's not easy to please anyway. And at centre back as well, they sold Carl Starfelt, but they spent about 8 million quid on two centre backs. So this whole notion that he's not been backed to this and the next thing, it's absolute nonsense. And I think he's a manager that's definitely feeling the pressure, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of months with him anyway.
Yeah, and you see, I put a tweet out a couple of weeks ago about Brendan Rodgers, and countless Leicester City fans replied to it saying, "Oh, Rodgers nearly ruined our club. He's the sole reason why we got relegated." And they're still suffering the effects from Brendan Rodgers because it looks like they're going to bottle automatic promotion this season.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are still blaming Rodgers for that. But yeah, that's the thing. I do believe Rodgers. I don't think Rodgers is a bad manager, but he's
No, he's not.
grossly overrated. He's grossly
Yeah.
overrated in the game.
Yeah. No, you're spot on. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that he's a bad manager or anything like that. Look, at the end of the day, he has had his success in Scotland. And he did do well that one season, I suppose, at Liverpool. But to be quite honest, I think that was more just on Luis Suarez and his genius rather than anything else. And yeah, I mean, he did do well to win the FA Cup with Leicester and, you know, finish in the top five and have half decent European campaigns. Like, he is a decent enough manager, but he's not an elite level manager. In fact, he's not even a level below an elite manager. I think your elite managers are, you know, Ancelotti, Klopp, Guardiola. Your level below elite managers are, you know, your Artetas, your Pochettinos, and then your level below that's sort of Brendan Rodgers. So Brendan Rodgers is not so much an elite manager. He's probably two levels below it. But, you know, I think you're spot on and well, a Leicester fan, should I say, are spot on in their assessment of him. As I say, when, well, maybe before he left Celtic, if you spoke to anyone in England and named Brendan Rodgers, people would just laugh at you because he's such a caricature. And I think when it comes to people's footballing opinions, as much as we like to take the mickey out of the English league and the money and stuff like that, and the English are pretty clued up when it comes to actual footballing ability, probably more so than we are up here. So I definitely take the word on it.
So would you say Rangers won the league, Craig, right? And Rodgers leaves Celtic. Where does he go, like, from there? Like, does he get another job in the Premier League? Or will he need to go back down to the Championship? Where does he go?
I think it would need to be the Championship. I mean, if I'm looking at it from an English club's point of view, the last two jobs that he's had in England have been Liverpool and Leicester, which have been failures, to be quite honest. So, you know, how you can possibly say that he's then qualified to take on a decent Premier League club, I don't know how you could say that. He's not getting anywhere near like a top half club, put it that way. Even the bottom half clubs, like, they tend to go for managers that are kind of been there and done it in terms of relegation battles. You know, the only relegation battle Rodgers has been in, you know, he jumped before he got pushed. So, you know, he's not had that experience of, you know, grinding out and keeping a team up and this, that, and the next thing. It was like he got promoted by Swansea and he just left straight for Liverpool, you know. He's always, the thing with Brendan Rodgers is he's always struck when the iron's hot with him. Do you know what I mean? He has a very good self-promoter and a very good marketer. You know, you've got to give him his credit for that. He's probably got one of the best agents in the business. So, you know, he does deserve credit for something at least. But when you think about it, you know, he goes to Liverpool, it's high off winning promotion with Swansea. Pretty decent achievement, to be fair. When he goes to Celtic, okay, you know,
it was a free hit. He had free reign.
It was a free hit. You know, he was going to get money to spend. He ended up spending more than double, maybe even triple of what Rangers did during their time in that period. And then he goes to Leicester on the back of winning everything in Scotland under that period at Celtic. And even coming back to Celtic now, whilst, you know, he's not got the aura, in inverted commas I'm using here, that he once had. At the end of the day, you know, Celtic's reason for bringing him in would have been that he's literally won every trophy that he's competed in Scotland. So, you know, he's more than qualified for the Celtic job. But he's under severe pressure. And, you know, it is weird how things change and how they don't change at the same time, Scott, because if you actually analyse, you know, points totals and numbers, Brendan Rodgers is performing at the exact same levels that Brendan Rodgers performed at his previous spell at Celtic in terms of games won and points won. The only difference is Rangers are better now, and Rangers are the, you know...
It's a challenge now, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Something so, Rodgers never faced before.
Yeah, so it's not Brendan Rodgers or Celtic that's the issue, it's Rangers being good that's the issue. And I just think there's a lot of Celtic fans that can't handle the fact that it's no 2016 or 2017 anymore. They're not going to beat Rangers 5-1 every game. And, you know, Brendan Rodgers, I think, you know, if you look at the way that he's handled himself this season, it's just a guy that's under pressure. And I think he knows that the game's up, but I think he knows that even Celtic fans are, you know, starting to get clever to his act.
And the Scottish Cup semi-finals will be coming up next month. Rangers got Hearts and Celtic got Aberdeen. So, Craig, are you happy with the tie that Rangers got?
No, really, to be honest. I would have loved Aberdeen. More so, they're the worst team out of the four, to be quite honest. And I know we'll talk about them later. But Graeme Shinnie's suspended for that game as well, who basically makes them tick. So I would have been very confident going into that game. We've got a good record against Hearts. But you know, I think Celtic will probably ease into the final with all their record against Aberdeen. You know, so I can't see anything other than a Celtic win. And I'm pretty confident Rangers will win against Hearts. The one thing that you were maybe hoping to avoid or not avoid, depending on who you are, is a potential Old Firm final on the 25th of May. Not been a Scottish Cup Old Firm final since 2002. That went pretty well. We love in Crans that day. You know, but I think that is what it's gearing up towards. And if Rangers do end up winning the league, you know, to secure a potential treble against Celtic, it's only happened once in history as well. Rangers have won seven trebles. The only time they secured a treble, was checking on this last week against Celtic, was in 1999 when Rod Wallace scored the winner at Hampden in the Scottish Cup final. Advocaat's first season, and that secured the treble. So it would be quite something if a guy from the same region of Europe, the
Yeah,
sort of Flanders region,
the
Belgium, Netherlands, and his first season managed to do the same feat as well. And maybe it could be a striker that scores a winning goal that's been written off all season. Rod Wallace, Cyril Dessers shaking hands with each other. But I think it's geared up towards that. And do you know what? It's the way it should be if it is the case. But I don't know if anyone else could take it, to be quite honest.
like, to be honest, I was delighted with the draw purely because I didn't want Celtic and I didn't want Aberdeen. And of course, Aberdeen, when you look at it on paper, they're like the weak link out of the all four teams. But they've just got a really patchy record against them. And I didn't want to take the chance because we've
Yeah, I
played Aberdeen.
suppose.
How many times have we played Aberdeen this season? I think four times. Four times I've played them.
Four, yeah. One,
Four
one.
times, right? And
Oh, no, two,
all
one, sorry.
the
Oh,
How
two,
many
one,
times have we
sorry. Two, one at Ibrox and one and
Oh,
obviously
two
the
at
cup final.
Ibrox, one at Pittodrie and one in the cup final, so four.
Yeah, four times and two wins, one drawn, one loss. So as it's
Yeah,
50% win
and plus
record,
as well,
it's
seeing the
patchy.
games in all the games as well, they've been very tight apart from the 3-1 victory for Aberdeen at Ibrox. So I
Yeah.
didn't want to take that risk. And Hearts, I think they're a good side, but like Rangers have got a tremendous record against Hearts. Like 5-0
Hi.
at Ibrox, beat Hearts earlier on this season at Hampden in the League Cup semi-final, and obviously beat them at Tynecastle, so I was delighted with it. I wanted to just avoid Celtic and Aberdeen, but it does look like it will be an Old Firm final, and unless Aberdeen were to cause some sort of an upset, but I can't see that, to be honest. But we'll move on, Craig, and we'll actually stay on the topic of Aberdeen. What a car crash of a season they've had. They're still in a relegation battle. They won it the weekend, of course, but things are still not looking good. They've still not got a manager. They appointed Neil Warnock a couple months ago. He left after a month. They've still not got a manager, as I said. But what is going on at Aberdeen, Craig? Like, they've just had an awful, awful season.
Yeah, Aberdeen. Funny. And as Neil Warnock says, Aberdeen, and then just sort of pauses for a few moments. What a guy Neil Warnock was, do you know what I mean? Getting to fulfil his lifelong ambition of managing in the dugout at Ibrox, wearing the brown brogues and the blue tie, and also getting Aberdeen into a relegation battle. I mean, what a guy he is. He should be given a lifetime season ticket in the director's box at Ibrox for that. But look, Aberdeen, what can you say about them? I think a lot of fans have been pretty unhappy with the owner and the chairman, Dave Colmack, the last couple of years, because they've got a few appointments wrong, to be quite honest. And to be fair, I think when you look at Aberdeen's squad, they're underperforming. I think that Aberdeen squad's probably the third best squad in the league. So
I've got to think about that.
I think if you look at Hearts are obviously by far and away the third best team in the league this season, but if you take Shankland out of them, you know, it's they're
Yeah, it's
probably,
very
you know,
mediocre at best,
yeah,
yeah.
exactly. I think Hibs have got a decent squad, to be fair. They spent quite a bit of money in the summer, Hibs, as well, probably about 1.5 million, which is kind of uncharted territory for Scottish clubs out with the Old Firm, and they've obviously brought in a couple of guys for Bournemouth. So they're underperforming as well. And Aberdeen as well, also severely underperforming. I don't know. I mean, you know, they had, who was it, Stephen Glass? He was a sort of
Since
they
Mark McInnes
finished
had
like,
brought a team last year, it didn't work out at all.
I think that the problem with Aberdeen is it's that they're a small club who think they're a big club that are stuck in a time warp for 40 years ago because they had a good 5 years in the 1980s. And you know, a lot of our fans just think, oh, being a big club automatically because of that. Danny McInnes was a brilliant manager for Aberdeen, probably one of the most successful
I thought it was ridiculously
in their
sacked him.
history.
Like, yeah,
But I
because
get you.
yeah, because I said at the time as well when he sacked him, like, be careful what you wish for, and now it's come back to haunt them massively. Because yeah, of course the football under McInnes wasn't great; it wasn't easy on the eye to watch, but he was consistent. He was getting them results, getting them into the top four. Like he was doing what was asked of him. But Aberdeen fans, as you said, they think they're bigger than what they are, and they were expecting a lot more. And now look at the state they're in right now. They're in an absolute mess. Of course, Robson done well last season, getting them third into Europe, and he got into a cup final this year. But apart from that, like the Robson appointment was another car crash. And the things on Cormac is the right man to be in charge at Aberdeen. But in terms of making footballing decisions, he should be nowhere near that because he's got all them wrong. All them wrong. And I think the next appointment, Aberdeen, whoever it is, right, the next appointment that comes in, they need to get this right. And one thing that baffles me, Craig, is the fact that Neil Lennon's still out of work. Neil Lennon's came out and said that he wants the Aberdeen job, and they've not even, to my knowledge, spoke to him. But if you were Dave Cormack and you've got Neil Lennon staring right in your face, you would appoint him, wouldn't
I'd be scared if I had Neil Lennon staring right in my face.
you?
I mean, I didn't know that he's actually come out and said that he's wanted the Aberdeen job. I think Lennon would do well at Aberdeen. He done well at Hibs, you know. And I actually thought, despite what, you know, Celtic fans say, I actually thought he'd done a pretty decent job at Celtic over his two spells, out with that last amazing season. But he did. I think overall he done a good job at Celtic. He done well at Hibs, so he's kind of proven that, you know, he's not just a one-hit wonder in management. You know, he's done well with a team of Hibs similar size to Aberdeen and whatnot. So I think he would do a decent job. But that's the thing. It's like, who do you appoint? I mean, the thing is with Aberdeen, they've kind of tried all the different managerial options, you know, since McInnes left. They've went for Stephen Clash, you know, a kind of former player in Scotland, you know, supposedly knows the league, you know, a knowledge of the American League out with Scotland, bringing players in for that and stuff like that. Then they sacked him. Then who was it? It was Barry. No, it was Jim Goodwin. Forgot about him. Who was
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah,
the Scottish football hotshot at the time? Aye,
lost
that
the
worked out.
marble. How could we get about Jim Goodman?
Aye,
That's
that
another
worked out.
terrible one.
Aye, another hotshot that worked out really well. Then they went with Barry Robson, you know, former player, you know, just gave him a chance, and then they were kind of hamstrung into giving him the job after they'd done so well for that last few months of the season. But obviously, long term, it was never going to work for him. I think the only reason that Aberdeen finished third, to be honest, last season was just because Hearts completely collapsed towards the end. And then, obviously, when Robson fails,
And Warnock
they
can then
brought in Warnock,
work out.
who's, you know, the experienced head. Even he can't sort them out.
Yeah.
So, what do you do? I mean, I heard that they're supposed to be bringing in some sort of German sporting consultancy on board. I don't know what that's going to achieve. To be quite honest, I think the two best appointments for Aberdeen, and one of them they're not going to get, it would be Derek McInnes. That is probably the best appointment for Aberdeen, but
I
why
don't
would
think
Derek
they'll go
McInnes
back.
go back? Ah,
No, I
exactly.
don't
Why
think
would
they'll go
he
back.
go back the way that he's been treated? I know he's a Killie manager now. He lives, you know, not that far. He lives in between Kilmarnock and Glasgow, put it that way. So in terms of commuting and all that, it's a perfect location for him. And to be fair, I think Derek McInnes has probably been primed up to be the next Scotland manager for when Steve Clarke steps down. So the ironic thing for Aberdeen is he would be the literal perfect replacement and the only guy that could take it on. But I think Lennon would do a decent job as well. To be fair, he is kind of the one that's staring right back at you in terms of an obvious choice. But I don't know. I think with Aberdeen bringing in this new consultancy firm, don't be surprised if they go left field. I mean, Ronnie Dyle is at a job now, so you never know.
Bring back the Ronnie Roll, that'll be something.
Aye, well, hopefully for East Kilbride's sake, they don't bring it back at that ground. I mean, that was one of the funnier moments of his time there, doing the Ronnie Roll in East Kilbride. Of all the things to come out of East Kilbride, they end up doing that. But aye, I don't know. I think Lennon would do a good job, but who knows what Dave Cormack's going to do.
Aye. And so obviously one last thing on Neil Lennon. Why is it with someone, when you look at his CV, right? He's got a very good CV. Why is it someone with his CV out of work right now? Because I do rate Lennon as a manager, despite it ending horribly at Celtic. But overall, in the piece, and he's two spells there at Celtic, done well. But why do you think no clubs are touching Neil Lennon right now?
I don't know. I mean, it might be a more personal choice for him. I mean, does he want to move down to England? I don't know. He probably doesn't, because family commitments up here and stuff like that. He's obviously not going to get the Celtic job again. So you're very limited there in the choices that you've got in Scotland. The only other jobs out with Celtic that he could possibly get, then, if you're going by that logic, is Aberdeen. Or even Hibs. I think Hibs would probably take him back. Well, Hibs fans anyway. So it's kind of one of the two, I think, for him. I don't know, to be quite honest. I think probably a mix of personal choice and maybe as well, because we know obviously Lennon's past and his history in terms of his temper and his hot-headedness, to say the least. So maybe clubs don't want to be associated with that. But you know, as I said earlier, I think he has proven himself to be a pretty decent manager. So he should be capable of getting a job down in England at least. But maybe it's just a case of, for personal reasons, he doesn't want to move there. But I think the Aberdeen job, it does kind of seem like a natural kind of match. So I'd be quite surprised if Aberdeen don't at least have a conversation with him, put it that way.
And Livingston, Craig, they are set for the drop. Like, there's no way they're going to be able to stay up, which is a shame, because obviously I like David Martindale's been on the podcast a few times. Really nice guy, down to earth. They will be going downs, but do you think they're going to really struggle to come back up next season? Because as we all know, Martindale has been very vocal about Livy's financial situation. He doesn't shut up about it. But do you think they're going to struggle to come back next season?
I mean, first off, I'll say I feel really bad for Davy Martindale. You know, I think it's quite obvious that the problems with Livy aren't with him. And it's not for lack of effort. You know, it is a budget, it is the money that he's been handed, or the lack of it, so to speak. They've just not got the quality to stay in the league. And you've made that point there about excuse me, already struggle to come back up. I think so, because if you look at the budgets of some of the top six teams in the Championship, dwarfs of it. I mean, look at Dundee United. Dundee United are paying top six SPFL wages. So, you know, you've got that. Raith Rovers have done well. You've got Dunfermline, Partick Thistle. These guys are all going to be paying higher wages in Livingston, and also these clubs are better geographically than Livingston, so to speak. You know, Partick Thistle, you're in Glasgow. Dundee United, I mean, all right, it's Dundee, but you know, you're in the middle of a city. With Livingston, you're in the middle of a town between Glasgow and Edinburgh. You struggle to attract fans because of either support Rangers or Celtic or Hibs or Hearts. Raith Rovers, I mean, they do have quite a big following, which people maybe underestimate, but a lot of the five clubs, like Raith Rovers, Dunfermline, they've got huge followings. So it will be tough for them to come back up. We have seen clubs in the past, and Livingston are actually one of them, that when they go down, it takes a while for them to come back up. I mean, Hamilton Accies, they were
League
in the
One.
league just 2 years ago, and now I think they're part time. It's quite sad what's happened to them. But you know, maybe end with Livingston on a positive note. I mean, I don't think they'll stay up, but if David Martindale can somehow pull it off, you know,
Oh yeah, it'll be a
that's
miracle.
got to be the biggest achievement of his time at Livy. I thought
He has said that, aye.
when he came in, and you know, he started off really well and got him to a cup final. Obviously, that's huge. But if he can manage to turn this around and, you know, keep this team up, be incredible. The one thing that I'd be interested to see, if it happens or not, is if Livy do get relegated, will David Martindale leave or not? I think, you know, from the outside looking in, he probably will still have a job there, which I think is right, because I think it's very easy for clubs to that have been relegated to like and say, aye, the manager's done this or that. I think David Martindale's kind of held the club together for the last couple of years, so he should be offered the opportunity to bring them back up. But I think it's whether he wants to do it or not, because as I said earlier, I feel quite bad for the guy because he just seems completely done in and as if it's sort of just been a gradual decline at Livy. So we'll see what happens, but you know, I think it would be a massive, massive achievement if he could keep them up.
Yeah, no, you're spot on, Craig. And the last question, mate. I ask everyone this question when they come on the podcast. I think you know what's coming. And hopefully I get the right answer. Who's better, Ronaldo or Messi?
Messi.
They're just saying that right now. I know who you think's better.
No, Messi for me, Scott. I know you're a Ronaldo fanboy, but Messi, I think just his natural talent for me just takes it over. I think what I will say about Ronaldo is, and he has, I think Ronaldo is more of an inspiration to Messi in the sense that if you look at the guy's work ethic, he proves that if you work your backside off, you can be the best of the best, pretty much. But I'm old fashioned. I like the whole natural talent, the story, and all that that goes with Messi. So he just edges it for me. But I really do respect Ronaldo, and I think in terms of his overall sort of demeanour and character, I think you'd probably struggle to get a better sports person ever, to be quite honest. But Messi just edges it for me.
So I've interviewed countless people on this podcast, like countless managers, countless footballers, right? And you know, the only two people from the game that have said Ronaldo's better than Messi have been Cammy Bell and Miksu Patalainen. The rest have all been Messi, sadly.
That's quite interesting. Cammy Bell, does he strike me as like a Ronaldo guy? Do you know what I mean?
He's a staunch Ronaldo man.
Neither does Miksu, to be honest. So that's quite weird. But nah, I think Messi for me. But you know, I think that's just because he's a player that when you look at, he makes you fall in love with football as a game. But Ronaldo is more about showing that hard work, determination, and doing the right things and eating right and whatnot. You can end up achieving the best possible results. So I think he's more of an inspiration in that because that is, I mean, I think Ronaldo's story is more realistic in the sense that you can look at that and as any person, any man, any woman at any level and say, if I work hard, I can aspire and I can achieve to be something. Whereas, you know, God just gave Messi something completely different and he's been like the luckiest guy in the world. In terms of his ability, but that's why he just edges it for me. It's just that God-given talent that he's luckily got. So yeah, Messi for me, but only just.
So, Craig, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you very much for coming on the pod, mate. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for listening to the show. If you want to listen to more episodes of Scott Score, they're available on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud. Until next time, take care, and we'll see you soon.